Support for WPR comes from Driftless Music Gardens with People Fest August 7th through 9th in Yuba, featuring Mo, Eggy, and People Brothers Band. Full lineup and tickets are at driftlessmusicgardens.com. Support for WPR comes from All Energy Solar, offering a webinar open to all to learn about the benefits of solar energy, July 29th and 30th. Registration at allenergysolar.com/webinar.
This is Chapter Day. I'm Jim Fleming, and I'm reading from Starlake Saloon and Housekeeping Cottages, a novel by Sarah Rath, published by Terrace Books, an imprint of the University of Wisconsin Press. Hannah Swan's life changed when she inherited her Uncle Hal's resort in northern Wisconsin. She's moved to Antler with her college-age daughter, Chloe, and her boyfriend, Eric. And Hannah has reopened the resort. Learning to run it, of course, is a different matter. On top of that, she has to face a town resort dispute over whether to welcome Ingold Mining to the area. She's just been out to visit Hal's old friend George Windsor to discuss it, because that mining dispute could be the death of her resort. Chapter 10 of Starlake Saloon and Housekeeping Cottages by Sarah Rath. On her way into town, she had spotted a narrow patch of wild blueberries growing in the sandy loam along Starlake Road, some distance from the resort. On her way back, she slowed and parked on the shoulder. If she could gather a couple of pints of wild blueberries, she would surprise Eric with a pie for his party. More important, Dan Carey had remarked to Ginger on the 4th of July that blueberry pie was his favorite. Hannah made her way slowly along the edge of the gravel road, gathering berries. Her fingers were soon stained blackish purple, like the sweet, juicy fruit in the plastic bag she'd emptied of tomatoes. She would have more than enough blueberries for a generous pie to serve with homemade vanilla ice cream. All kinds of articles and studies, George Windsor had said he'd given Hal. Charts and figures, Hannah repeated to herself. She might discover something in Hal's files to indicate why Ingold wanted the resort. The shot must have come from the woods, but the exact direction was uncertain because the sound of the windshield shattering was almost instantaneous with the impact of the explosive blast. Hannah ducked instinctively and fell to the ground. She crawled partway underneath the car for protection. Confused, she touched her left cheek where something stung. Small, hard pieces of glass were embedded there, and in her forearm. She tasted warm blood on her fingers when she brought them to her mouth to stifle sobs of fear. This was not an accident. It was no mistake, Hannah was sure of that. It wasn't hunting season, and in the 20 minutes or so that she'd been picking blueberries, she had not heard any other shots. So it wasn't target practice either, unless she was the target. What was happening? How long would she have to wait? Would she be in danger again if she moved? If she sneezed? Whoever shot at her must have seen her fall and would not know if she'd been hit. She would have to lie motionless for a while, wait, and see what happened next. Suppose that whoever it was came to see if she was dead. She couldn't wait all day. She had to get back to Star Lake. She had a pie to bake. She had ice cream to make. Company was coming for dinner. A car raced toward her. Tires skidded on gravel as the brakes were applied. If it was the person who shot at her, she was as good as gone, she realized. She bit her fist and held her breath to stay as still as she possibly could. Hannah! Hannah, for God's sake! It was Dan. He carefully pulled her out from beneath her car and knelt beside her, feeling for her pulse. He removed the bag of crushed blueberries from her grasp with a gentle tug. I've got to call Sheriff Cooper again, she said tearfully. Even without opening her eyes, Hannah knew she was in the city again, and it was garbage day. The collected clink and clatter of yawning maws crawled along the curb. Every time the garbage truck came, she felt a twinge of anxiety, a residual fear she had accidentally thrown away a meaningful part of her life that she would eventually regret. At the Cedar Springs Hospital, where Dan had taken her for examination, Sheriff Cooper admonished Hannah to be extra cautious. "Might have been those jet ski guys you riled up," he suggested. "If I was you, I'd lay low and be on the lookout." Carrie and me tramped all round there, didn't find any trace of any shells. You made friends up here when you got TV coverage of the hearing. Made a few enemies, too, Dan added later. Thin praise from him, admittedly, and dearly won, but praise, nevertheless. She clung to that. Since that afternoon she had deferred memories of the concern evident in Dan's eyes, his tender caress as he brushed the debris from her face and murmured her name. He had released his hold as soon as she assured him she was not badly injured. Pieces of the Toyota's shattered side-view mirror had grazed the side of her cheek and become embedded in her forearm. She would retain a few minor battle scars. Thanks to getting shot at, the resort had grown noticeably quieter during the past week. Cancellations began arriving as soon as news of the incident was revealed. Reporters, who were around town anyway, covering Ingold's nervous hiatus, were quick to grab the story. Hannah Swan, anti-mine activist and owner of the Star Lake Saloon, was injured Sunday, the target of a sniper attack not far from her resort. They said her cottages had suffered damages and she had received additional threats this summer. The free publicity didn't help. Anti-mine activist. That was a new one. What a laugh. Looks like Ingold intends to close us down, she confided to Dan and Ginger. She had an idea the mine could take credit for some exaggerated media coverage, too. I don't think you were meant to be killed, Dan agreed, just scared away. Looks like a pattern of sabotage. The fight in the bar, the broken mirror, the septic tank. Those jet skiers were probably hired. I bet Ingold stole those toasters, Ginger added, without cracking a smile. Hannah took the sheriff's advice and, except for driving back to Madison, left the resort only when accompanied by someone else. She kept close tabs on Babe. Then she started worrying about forest fires. Every departing guest underwent her paranoid scrutiny. She flinched at the slightest noise. So it was good to be home, for many reasons. While Hannah lingered over coffee, Chloe telephoned from Star Lake with frantic news. Hearing examiner Carl Mead was going to issue his decision on the mine much earlier than expected. Instead of waiting until October, Ingold would announce today that their permits had been granted by the state. The mine would begin construction at once. Hannah sat down at the kitchen table, sighed, and covered her eyes with her hand. "We're absolutely numb up here, too, Mom," Chloe said quickly. "Everybody's meeting in the saloon, and we're trying to make some plans. How soon can you get back?" Then Dan's voice on the phone. "Hannah, hi, we need a favor, and you're at the right place at the right time. Do you think you can be at DNR headquarters this afternoon? Mead's going to make his announcement at 1 o'clock. See if you can have a word with the press afterward. Try to shake things up, okay? We're counting on you." Hannah agreed, without a moment to reconsider. After all their work, after all she'd gone through, the evidence. "And be careful," he added. "I gotta go, Mom," Chloe said. "We can talk again tonight, and try to come back as soon as you can. We need your help." Late morning, Hannah rode her bike through campus, dodging students sauntering to and from summer school classes. Was Tyler still in Alaska? She didn't really want to know. No time for him today. No time for him ever again. That seemed extraordinarily odd. A rough cut of the Wilcox video was set up for her viewing at the station. She made a brief, cool appearance at the door of Joe Mickelson's office and told him the initial footage looked okay. Joe was in the mood to visit. "Well, I couldn't use it all, but I sure liked that segment you did about the mine. Did I ever tell you that? When you move back to Madison, I'll give you another assignment if you're interested in news and public affairs. And just to show you my heart's in the right place, I'll send a couple of guys down there to cover the DNR for you this afternoon." He was already punching buttons on his phone. "Mine or no mine, it'll be a nice follow-up to your earlier story. Now you be careful, young lady." He'd read news of the shooting. Hannah rode her bike down State Street to the state capitol, then around the square to the state office building where the Department of Natural Resources had its headquarters. She parked her bike near the entrance. How could she discover where Mead was making his announcement in this maze of government bureaucracy? Even more important, how could she manage to gain admission? Anna Swan, what are you doing here? Dennis Windsor had his hand on her shoulder. Axel Graves and a couple other men were making their way toward the main door. Well, I'm here on business, Dennis. Personal stuff, same as you, I suppose. Anna fell into step next to Windsor as if she'd been one of his party all along. When they reached the boardroom, where Meade and other DNR officials were waiting, Hannah stood among the press, greeting Joe Mickelson's breathless cameraman and audio engineer sent over from Wisconsin Public Television. The hearing examiner, Carl Meade, picked up a sheaf of papers and moved to a podium at a conference table. Flashes flickered, reporters leaned forward, and TV cameras zoomed in. In summary, Meade said, his 143-page decision granted Ingold permits and approvals to operate an open-pit copper mine east of Star Lake, but any party to the proceeding adversely affected by the decision had 20 days to petition the DNR secretary for review and a possible rehearing. The waters of the celestial flowage and the ecology of northern Wisconsin are valuable treasures to the people of this state. No one wants to be a party to the despoiling of these resources, but I am convinced that the permits contain adequate controls to ensure a safe and clean operation. Hannah was stunned, amazed at his words. After Meade moved aside, Axel Graves took the podium. We are extremely pleased with Mr. Meade's decision. We look forward to establishing a record of responsible environmental stewardship that will ease all the concerns of those who raised questions about the mine during the permitting process. There was a short period for questions and answers between the press and the men at the front table. Excuse me, Hannah said timidly, and then louder, Mr. Graves? Mr. Meade? For courage, she thought of the gang of friends and family at Star Lake who were depending on her to make a splash, and she stepped forward. You may not remember me, but I'm one of those who tried to raise some questions at the master's hearing in Cedar Springs, Hannah said. I have one final question for you, Mr. Meade. I'd like to know how you can be comfortable making a decision like this. Axel Graves had his hand on Dennis Windsor's sleeve, holding him back. I own a resort on Star Lake, she explained, on land that my family has been associated with for over a century. We're just across the water from Ingold's proposed open-pit mine. Your decision today could mean the end of a modest haven that has offered solitude to vacationers since the late 1800s. We want you to know, Mr. Meade, that we are not going to give up our fight with the issuance of your decision. You can be assured that we'll get an injunction. My friends and family will appeal. We are not about to let Ingold take over our constitutional rights and our democratic system, as well as our natural wealth. She called Chloe that night. We saw you on TV, Mom. You were on every channel up here. You were fantastic. I was absolutely floored. Way to go, Hannah, she heard Eric in the background. I have an appointment for a haircut on Thursday, Hannah told her daughter. It was the only opening they had. I can't leave before that. One more thing, Mom, Chloe interrupted. Grandma's coming? Hannah's spirits sank even lower. Tell me this is a joke, she pleaded. No joke, Mom, sorry. Somebody sent her an article from the Milwaukee paper that said you were shot. She's all worried. She says she won't be satisfied till she sees you're okay. Well, good God, Chloe. Lily's coming to Star Lake? When? In time for Labor Day? I told her we'd put her up. What else could I do? Oh, we'll have to manage, Hannah replied, trying to imagine her mother shooting bar dice with Ginger in the saloon and chatting with gamey fishermen. Give Lily a day or so, and she will soon have had enough. Friday morning, Hannah woke in her Star Lake bedroom, swallowed her daily dose of herbal remedies, and checked her reflection in the bathroom mirror for jowls or double chin. There she was, Hannah Swan, middle-aged, scarred from her brush with death and the blueberries. Celestial Summer was meeting at Forest Temple that night. Of course, she had to attend. Ginger was tied up with bar traffic because Eric and Chloe were initiating their first-ever Star Lake Saloon Friday night all-you-can-eat walleye fish fry. It was raining by the time everyone arrived, so they gathered in the largest teepee. The group had grown since Hannah had first been introduced. Now there were summer people, fishermen, hunters, other area resort owners, and families from Antler that Hannah only barely knew. The meeting had been called to discuss the possibility of a citizen's injunction in response to the hearing examiner's decision. Divers from the DNR had found two species of freshwater clams near the section of the Lost Arrow River where the water from the mine would be discharged. One was a purple wartyback, which was on the state's endangered species list. The other was a bullhead clam, which was even less common. Hannah knew something about endangered clams, thanks to Tyler, and realized there might be reason to celebrate. The purple wartyback clam was found just below the culvert, Dan said, and after that the divers looked further upriver at the entrance to Sundog, where they discovered the bullhead. The DNR's biologists also recently discovered a pygmy snake-tailed dragonfly near the mine site, a dragonfly so exclusive to the celestial flowage that its name isn't even official yet. And two rare species of fish, the river red horse and the gilt darter. But didn't they already issue an environmental impact statement? One of the summer people wanted to know. Well, that's right, Dan replied. Their official environmental impact survey was approved over a year ago. At that time, we warned the DNR they hadn't been thorough enough, and that'll be the basis of our injunction. Dan closed the meeting by congratulating Hannah for speaking out and taking such a formidable stand at the DNR press conference on Tuesday. Later, after Lynn served tea and carob brownies, the crowd thinned. Hannah had a chance to inform Dan about Tyler's international fame as a malacologist. I'm not sure I mentioned that, she said, reluctant to remind him of her rather sensational fall from grace. Heard about his reputation, he said wearily. The biologist Victor talked to, the one who suggested a new environmental impact survey, that was Professor Cole, strange as it may seem. He was here while you were in Madison, so I figured he wasn't looking for you this time. Dan did not smile when he said it, just looked very tired. But Hannah was puzzled. Well, I suppose he could have been called in by Ingold for consultation on the clams. He does that kind of work. She thought it peculiar, however, that Tyler might have agreed to work for Ingold without informing her. Oh, you gotta love those kids, Ginger said Saturday night, refilling Hannah's wine glass and pouring another for herself. Their walleye fry was a winner. Folks seem to enjoy all that get-up-and-go. Seems a shame Eric and Chloe have to leave pretty soon. I don't know how I can bring myself to say so long. Hannah agreed. It's been a strange adventure, hasn't it? I'll be honest, I've enjoyed this summer more than I ever thought I would. Hannah sipped her wine. By the way, does the name Ginger Peaches ring a bell? Where'd you come up with such damn foolishness? Ginger asked, feigning embarrassment as she lit a cigarette somewhat unsteadily. Crazy old coot. Ginger and George Windsor? That was too far-fetched even for Hannah's creative acumen. Oh, I was attracted to your Uncle Hal, Ginger admitted, but all his life he was faithful to Miriam's memory. Ginger finished her wine and put her feet on the railing. Georgie, though. Well, he was something else. I miss that old billy goat like all get out, wouldn't you know? Sirius, the dog star, had been rising with the sun for over a month by early August, and people with reservations for Labor Day weekend were calling to ask if the resort would still be open for business. Things were just fine for the time being, Hannah told them. I haven't even noticed if they've begun cutting trees over at the mine site. That excuse lasted a few days before she had to amend it. I noticed they were cutting some trees, but I haven't seen any bulldozing. By the second week in August, the groans of earth-moving equipment echoed ominously across the water. They're doing a little work over there, but nothing that's inconveniencing us. How long would that suffice? Except for weekends, when the bar was open late and crowds were noisier, she slept on the screened porch above the saloon. Sunday through Thursday, the cot along the south screened wall became an eyrie, where her dreams were untroubled by woodland rhythms and haunting tremolos of loons, was part of her healing process. She was progressing with her writing. If the cottages were only half filled, then Hannah negotiated a couple of hours to work on her Mind Games documentary proposal. Clearly, there was an important story hidden in the boxes of clippings in Hal's study. As George Windsor had promised, she found records of Ingold's research and analysis, but she found no mention of surveys other than those done on Ingold's land. The growing commotion over at the mine site only increased Hannah's resolve. She intended to get the project organized and convince Joe of its worth. And not only Joe, but potential funding agencies, and PBS, and anyone else who had the power to squelch it. With Miriam's telescope, Hannah could observe what looked like a war zone across the lake. Due to clear-cutting, there was a pretty good view of the painful gash in the formerly pristine landscape. A chain-link fence had been installed around the entire perimeter. Timber had been removed, and they had begun scraping the topsoil and hauling it away. A bomb might have been dropped on that bullseye for all the devastation. The antler advocate said Ingold would begin digging the pit before winter, if possible. The first ore shipments were scheduled for the following fall. Hannah often heard the now familiar hum of Dan's boat as she lay awake waiting for sunrise. This wasn't unusual. He frequently came by in the hours before dawn to pick up fishermen, and Hannah enjoyed the knowledge that he was right below her porch. This morning, she tracked his progress by telescope. Dan's bow parted a light haze still suspended above the water. The place was dead quiet. If he'd turn off the motor, he would easily hear her whisper hello. In fact, he did turn off the motor. Hannah wondered why he would arrive before 5 a.m. if not to pick up a client. "Good morning," she called softly from the sleeping porch. "Meet me at the back door." His voice was low and conspiratorial in the early hush. "I've only got a few minutes," he said, in the kitchen, as Hannah flicked the switch on her coffee maker. "I'm taking some of your folks out from Muskie's. We'd have had better luck last night, but they want to take their chances when the sun's up." They sat across from one another at the kitchen table. "I can't believe how fast things are moving over at the mine site. I've been using Miriam's telescope," Hannah explained. "Well, once they heard about our lawsuit, they started stripping away the soil as fast as they could. All we need's a big rainstorm to cause some bad erosion. That'd be a real mess." "Victor's down in Madison with Ben. The hearing before the new judge is looking good. Yesterday, the director of the Bureau of Endangered Resources recommended another environmental survey. Might be able to get a temporary restraining order, force Ingold to suspend construction till that's completed."
"Breathing space," Hannah agreed.
"Yeah, even so, there are 5 more permits for mines pending up here right now, waiting to be reviewed, so Governor Dawson's pressuring the DNR to allow Ingold to go ahead."
They drank their coffee while the sky turned slowly from dove gray to amethyst.
"I gotta leave," he said, breaking the spell. "Didn't mean to wake you, but I'll be out all day. I wanted to bring you up to speed."
"You didn't wake me," she replied.
He asked, "Any word from Professor Cole?"
"Not for a long time. Not since, you know, that day."
She wasn't even comfortable saying Tyler's name. "Well, we can expect another ruling pretty soon," Dan said, as he turned to leave. "By the way, your buddy Mickelson called to schedule a fishing date. You know how booked up I am right now, but I figured this was important to you."
"Joe's a good friend," Hannah nodded.
"Tried to figure something out. The only day that seemed remotely possible was next Sunday. It was fine with him. I had to make it tentative until I checked with you about a minor conflict."
Hannah was anxious for Joe to get to know Dan. It could be a strong selling point for a documentary if Joe could learn more about the Ingold situation from someone else. "What's the problem?" Hannah asked, apprehensive.
"Oh, Lynn and Lyle are scheduled to play at a bluegrass festival in Ann Arbor. I promised I'd keep an eye on Leslie. If you'd take him for me on Sunday, I could spend the day with the Mickelsons."
"A whole day? With Leslie? And one of her precious Sunday mornings, besides?" She groped for an answer, determined to negotiate more from babysitting that kid than a mere fishing date for Joe and his wife. "Well, I want Joe, to produce a documentary about our mining problem, Hannah finally confessed. I got the idea from George Windsor, of all people. And I'd hope maybe one day, when you weren't so busy, we could toss around a few ideas between the two of us, you and I, because I've been working on a treatment that I really think has some possibilities. Okay, she'd gone that far. Might as well spill the rest. So is there any way you could help me sell it? I mean, convince Joe the idea is a good one, like have a discussion about the mine while you're fishing or something? Dan said he was working nights now and usually slept late, but he had his afternoons fairly free. I can take a look at my schedule, see if I can shift a few things around. Maybe I'll be able to squeeze in a tour of the mine site for him while he's up here. If you think that'd help. Hannah was sure it would. Joe needed to see visual possibilities, and the ongoing destruction was a graphic example. Due to a cancellation, Hannah was able to switch Joe and Helen Mickelson from tiny Vega to Aldebaran, her nicest cottage. Dan came over on Sunday morning to pick them up. The boat left the pier, and Hannah and Leslie waved goodbye as the boat dissolved into the mist. Babe seemed to be contemplating an early morning swim, but sniffed the water and trotted back toward shore. At 4 a.m., the outdoor thermometer barely registered 40 degrees, and the day stretched ahead for Hannah like an early nightmare. "Uncle Dan promised you'd make pancakes," Leslie said. "Don't you want to go back to bed?" Hannah suggested hopefully. "If you don't want to go back to sleep, you can read or watch cartoons on TV. I saved some comic books for you that I found in one of the cottages." "Oh, cool," Leslie replied. "Lyle and Lynn don't allow me to read comics, and we don't have a TV. The only time I get to watch TV is at Uncle Dan's." But the idea of hot pancakes with maple syrup began to appeal to Hannah, so she fixed a big breakfast, then lay on her cot to doze while Leslie read. Besides the comic books, she had no idea how to keep an 11-year-old boy occupied. What he really wanted to do, it turned out later, was play with Eric's camcorder. "That's okay with me," Eric told Hannah as he mopped the floor of the saloon. "I showed him how to use it." So, Sunday morning, Hannah and Leslie walked in the woods with Eric's video camera, and the boy was fairly content. "What do you think I should film, Hannah?" he asked. "I'll tell you what. Why don't you make a movie?" "I can't make a movie. I don't have any actors except you. I don't want to make a movie about you. Unless you get shot again, then I could make a movie about that, a murder mystery." "Thanks a lot, Leslie. But you got Babe." "Well, what good's a dog? I can't make a movie about her." "Sure you can," Hannah said. "What's Babe doing?" "Smelling stumps and rotten branches and decaying stuff, a bunch of ferns." "What's she identifying there, do you think?" "Well, how do I know? Bear tracks? Deer scat? Foxes?" If she could get Leslie involved in a creative project, maybe he would let her alone for an hour or more. There was a new tape in the camcorder, worth at least 2 hours of standard recording time. "Well, then you get down at ground level and use the camcorder as if the lens is seeing what Babe's eyes see. Look at the woods from her point of view. And before you press the button, figure out what she's thinking so you can add her dialogue. You'll have to be her voice. Make up an adventure. Pretend Babe is hunting something. Add the clues she's finding. And you can shoot her once in a while, too." "Shoot her?" "Get her in the picture. But not when you're pretending to be Babe. Does that make sense?" "I think so," Leslie said with mild excitement. "I should stand up when I'm showing Babe and what she's doing, and then I can get down on my hands and knees to shoot whatever Babe sees, like she's seeing it." "You got it." Hannah headed for her favorite rock, where she planned to catch up on her journal and review the final draft of the mining documentary proposal. "You won't get lost if you keep Babe nearby," she promised. "Meet me back at this spot when you run out of tape." Starlight Saloon, a novel by Sarah Rath, published by Terrace Books, a trade imprint of the University of Wisconsin Press. Again next time on Chapter Day.